A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens' inspiring story, opens with the classic line, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." He was talking about the political and social life of Europe in the late 18th century, with a particular emphasis on the French Revolution. At the beginning, he related a cryptic message about someone being recalled to life after having been unjustly jailed in the Bastille for 17 years. It is not difficult to draw parallels to that phrase when discussing medicine in this time, an age of extraordinary medical advancements overall. On the plus side, the best of times include a technology that is unprecedented in its ability to help establish an accurate diagnosis, newer medicines continually being developed that are offering reasons for hope where there were none, and physicians who are increasing their skills by refining them and narrowing their scope, becoming more specialized in the process. The result of all this is seemingly unlimited potential for the world of medicine to help as never before. Yet, with all these advancements, there come many problems, which is where the other half of Dickens' sentence about the worst of times comes into play. Those problems include a fairly significant portion of society that still has a limited access to medical care, and an even larger percentage that is worrying about how they are going to pay for the new technology, the new medicines, and the more specialized physicians. When factoring in the additional frustrations of dealing with the seemingly endless bureaucracy of health insurance companies, it is easy to see why people are not as happy about the advances as they could be. These contrasts are even greater if you look at the realm of personal health care. Because of all the medical advances, people are actually living longer. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, report that the average life expectancy for men rose to 74.4 years in 2001, representing an incredible 3-year increase compared to 10 years earlier. And the death rates for the three perpetually leading causes of death, cancer, heart disease, and strokes, were found to consistently decline during this same time period. More people are exercising. More people are watching their diets. Yet, taken as a whole, society appears to be less healthy. As a nation, Americans are gaining weight in record numbers. According to the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, NHANES, over 64% of Americans, roughly 2 out of every 3 adults, were considered overweight in the year 2000. Approximately 31% of the population, 59 million people, were considered outright obese. With this weight gain, the expected impact on diabetes and hypertension naturally followed. The CDC reported that during the 1990s alone, the incidence of diabetes increased from 5.1% to 7.3%, and that of hypertension rose from 28% to 33%. More people are depressed. More people are anxious, and more people are feeling stressed than ever before. Ultimately, people do not seem as happy as they should be, given the relative prosperity of the time. In many ways, this discontent seems to arise from not developing good habits, habits that represent the cornerstone of healthier living and center on maintaining discipline about the small things in life. If you can change the manner in which you do these small things, the ripples from this action can lead to a fairly large wave. The small changes can lead to lasting, life-improving, and life-prolonging results. In essence, small investments can pay huge dividends. Paraphrasing Charles Dickens' words about the man recalled to life from his lengthy prison sentence, I am writing about how people can be recalled to health. drawing on the inspiration I receive from many of my patients to hopefully inspire you in your efforts to change. I also hope to provide a framework that can serve as a practical guide to help you get started. In sum, I want to help you free yourself from a self-imposed jail of bad habits and be recalled to health.